not often where we have a missing person case and they've been gone for several weeks and they come back alive. But luckily, it has happened for Nikki Alcaraz. We were just talking about this the other day. While she was missing, a 33-year-old woman vanished without a trace on a road trip with her boyfriend, Steven Tyler Stratton. They've been located. But this relief is tempered with a whirlwind of unanswered questions and deepening concerns as law enforcement officials turn their attention to the man who accompanied her on this fateful journey. Alcaraz and Stratton set off on their adventure, but somewhere along the line, the journey turned sour. In Moratorio, New Mexico, a small town roughly 25 miles east of Albuquerque, the couple was caught up in a violent domestic dispute that resulted in Alcaraz sustaining visible injuries. If you've watched the body cam footage from the police officer, you can see it. A black eye, bruises scattered across her body. Stratton, too, bore signs of physical abuse, with blood stemming from his mouth and nose. A passing trucker confirmed the violent nature of their clash, stating that he saw Nikki being brutally assaulted by Stratton. Despite such harrowing circumstances and an initial inclination to press charges, also on the body cam video, both parties eventually decided against legal proceedings and continued on their journey. Now, this is where a lot of problems begin. Alarm bells began to ring when Alcaraz ceased communication with her family, triggering unsettling parallels with Gabby Petito in that case, where police did intervene. And at the end of the day, said, okay, you guys go along your own way. It seems like y'all got this sorted out now, don't you? Obviously, it should not have gone that way. 3 weeks later, after growing fears and concerns, Nikki was spotted in Redding, California, selling her cell phone at a kiosk. Following her confirmation of being alive and safe, a sense of trepidation still lingered as the couple's activities and Nikki's well-being remained very much in question. Even questioning, was it her selling the cell phone? Why would she be doing that? As the puzzle of Nikki's whereabouts gradually solved, another began to take shape in nearby Eureka, California, where local law enforcement had been conducting their own investigations. Stratton and Alcaraz, still traveling in their black Jeep, were discovered in Eureka early on Tuesday morning. A local resident recognized the couple from news coverage and dialed 911. When police arrived to conduct a welfare check, Alcaraz insisted she was fine and required no assistance. However, the authorities' focus was shifting towards Stratton. On further investigation, law enforcement unearthed an outstanding warrant against Stratton from an incident in Tennessee related to theft. With this revelation, Stratton was promptly arrested at the scene, which he should have been 3 weeks ago. His arrest was met with relief by Nikki's friends, particularly her close friend Amanda Sanders. However, Sanders expressed anger and confusion about why Stratton had not been arrested sooner, mm-hmm. when evidence of violence and an outstanding warrant already existed. Everyone is questioning that.
Ding, 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 ding. We have a winner.
It's just, how? Why? The handling of the initial incident in Mortieri has also been called into question. Despite witnessing the domestic dispute and the evidence of an outstanding warrant, officers let the couple go, prompting criticism and prompting an internal review of the officer's conduct. Torrance County Sheriff David Frazee stated that in a situation as severe as this, arrests should typically have been made. Any missteps in the handling of the case would be thoroughly investigated and appropriate corrective actions taken, ensuring accountability. I will say a big bravo to that sheriff for saying that, because so often what we have is everybody digging in, going, we did everything right, and not wanting to take any sort of accountability. And I get it for legal maneuvering, but at the same place, this is how the public's trust is eroded every single day in law enforcement. When nobody takes accountability and says, we're fallible, we messed up, shouldn't have done it that way. Here's why we thought we were in the right at the time, but you know what? We were wrong. Hindsight's 20/20, as it is for so many things in life. So bravo to the officer for saying, we're going to look into this. We're not going to let this happen anymore. While Nikki's safety has been confirmed, the incident has left an unsettling air of unease. Questions still linger. Why didn't Nikki contact her family? What prompted her to sell her phone? The focus now on ensuring that Nikki gets the support she needs during this challenging period while law enforcement continues to investigate any potential charges against Stratton. It's going to be very interesting to watch and see what exactly was at play here. I got a couple guesses. Go ahead.
So I'm concerned about when they do a search of your driver's license. And I do believe I saw on the body cam footage that they did ask for his ID.
Uh-huh.
Why didn't they see this warrant? What failure in their system exists that wasn't flagged immediately? That obviously the whole situation that we just talked about is extremely important, that they should have made some arrests. But I want to know from a software standpoint, why didn't his license get flagged? What failure in their system needs to be fixed right this damn second?
Oh, that's a good question. And even maybe it did show up. Maybe there wasn't a failure in the actual system. It was more so a judgment call on the part of the officers who did not make an arrest at that moment in time. It could come down to something really as simple as manpower, and what does that jurisdiction believe about handling cases like this? Do they frown on bringing people in for things like this because there's only so many resources to handle them? And if both parties at the scene are saying we're good, they should have still intervened because one's going to feel it's the same thing with Gabby Petito. You know, You get there, one's going to start feeling bad, and oh my gosh, the person that I love and has kind of brainwashed me is going to get in trouble and be arrested, and I don't want that for them because I still love them. And oh no, I'm going to say everything's okay, so they go away and everything's going to be fine now. Maybe he learned his lesson, and they usually end up dead.
And they'll change.
Yeah, that's typically the thinking. I don't know what obviously the situation is here between these two. If you're to make some judgment calls simply by, I don't know, looking at them and seeing some of their responses and the way that things were being handled, I'm going to guess there's some drug addiction issues going on here and probably some very horrible behavior, probably very abusive behavior, certainly on the part of him that was witnessed by a truck driver who called 911. Maybe there's it's going both ways. I don't know, but there's probably a lot of control here if she chose to not reach out to her family or was not able to or allowed to or prevented from reaching out to her friends and family, who she does clearly have a group of people that do care about her and wanted her back safely. So
I don't understand. You know, you just said it, I think, that, you know, maybe she wasn't being allowed to reach out to family and friends. Mm-hmm. But that's frightening to me. That should have triggered a whole bunch of need to find these people. And then when they were found, you know, we've got a problem. There's so many failures here. There's just so many.
Why the arrest wasn't made initially, that would have solved all of this. And it seems like such a simple thing to have taken place. But again, everything I talked about, those are a lot of the reasons sometimes why officers don't make those calls. Because they're damned if they do, they're damned if they don't. You're talking about people's civil liberties here, and everybody seems to have a different definition of what exactly that means. Should you step in when someone clearly looks like they're being abused? Obviously, the answer is yes. But others could argue and say, well, they're figuring it out on their own. They don't need the outside intervention on this or that. You're violating their rights. You know, it's always better to err on the side of caution. If you're violating the rights, they go downtown and they're released the next day. There was plenty of things you could have put them into a 24 or 48 hour hold on that initial call to let things calm down and not go more out of control. And they're very lucky. She's very lucky that this did not turn into a homicide where they're searching for a body, which quite honestly is where I thought we were going to be at this point in the week. I didn't think that we were going to be continuing to look for her as a missing person and more so of a recovery effort at some point. But
well, the fact that she was missing for so long, again, what the hell, where were they? What was happening? I let's fill in the gaps. More information.
Lots of questions to be answered about them. the people making choices and decisions. How much was this a situation where she was not making choices and decisions and essentially being held captive? Well, it's easy for us to go and put the blame on him, but we really don't know much of anything yet. But it will be interesting to take a look at that and see that. And for the love of God, can this please be another lesson for police departments on this sort of thing with domestic abuse going on? When you see it happening in front of you, you have the abuse victims in front of you, for the love of God, fucking do something. Murder in the Morning from the Hidden Killers Podcast. You want to weigh in on this or any of the cases we're following? The phone number is 888-554-5537. 888-5-KILLER is the number. And if you'd like an ad-free experience of the show and get access to all of our podcasts on the True Crime Today Network, press subscribe on Apple Podcasts to the premium membership. You get access to all that, and you can start binging away right now. For Stacey, I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for The New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public would be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.